a 19-year-old who can't legally drink champagne in Japan, just won back-to-back races to become the youngest championship leader in Formula One history. And the driver he held off to do it? Oscar Piastri, who hasn't started a race this season, missing the first two, only to get back in the car at Suzuka to lead the Grand Prix for 15 laps like he's never been away. What a race. Welcome back to Away We Go podcast.
Are you ready? And it's lights out and away we go. Let's do it.
Welcome back to Away We Go podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel and lifestyle surrounding the sport. My name's Diane Bortoletto and today I'm in Margaret River. And welcome back to my co-host, Kira Gillen. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back.
Another race weekend, which is exciting. We've just had the Japanese Grand Prix in Suzuka, which is a 5.8-kilometre track, famous for its figure-of-eight layout, flowing S's, 18 corners, and a crossover bridge, and 53 laps we enjoyed today, which was fantastic, a total distance of 307 kilometres. And Japan has been part of the Formula One calendar since 1987, and it's a driver favourite and a fan favourite, a very special race.
Yeah, I saw a stat actually on the screen that said it was Japan's 40th race, but 37th in Suzuka. Okay, yes. There you go, good, long history, nice.
Yes. So the race at Suzuka, I mean, what did you think?
It's crazy. Yeah, it was really good. I was extremely nervous for most of it because I just thought the inevitable is going to happen and it's going to be a Mercedes 1-2. And I was so delighted that it wasn't. Sorry, Mercedes. Sorry, George. We were falling into a trap very quickly of it being very predictable. I didn't see it coming at all. And Oscar, I have so much happy things to say. I can't wait to talk about him.
Well, look, diving straight into the race result because it was so exciting. So we had Kimi Antonelli, who took the top step, who won, who's leading the championship now, the youngest driver in Formula One history ever to lead the World Drivers' Championship. He's 19 and 200 and something days old, not 20 yet. So he won in the Mercedes. Oscar Piastri in McLaren came second. So this is the first time Oscar has started a Grand Prix this season. Yeah, so he finished second. Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari in third. George Russell in the other Mercedes in fourth, Lando Norris in fifth in McLaren, in sixth was Lewis Hamilton in the other Ferrari, in seventh Pierre Gasly in the Alpine. Fantastic result for Pierre, who beat Max Verstappen in Red Bull in eighth, Liam Lawson in Racing Bulls in ninth, Esteban Ocon in Haas in 10th. That rounds out the top 10. And then it was Nico Hülkenberg in the Audi, Isaac Hadjar, Gabriel Bortoletto and the other Audi, and so forth. But, wow, Kimi Antonelli, that's back-to-back race wins for him. Fabulous.
Yeah. But it's been X number of years since an Italian won back-to-back races.
1953.
Wow. Yeah. No, it's amazing. I mean, I do have to remind myself that I'm dating Italians, so I should be happy when Kimi wins. But no, it ain't good. Because then I do get happy and I'm like, okay, I'm happy with this. But like I thought Piastri was going, anyway, it was great. It was really great for him. George should be starting to get a little bit worried personally. He seems to be having a lot more technical issues or issues in general than Kimi. Definitely didn't have the same speed as Kimi this weekend. No. And Kimi had all the luck. That safety car, the timing of that safety car.
Worst timing for George, the best timing for Kimi. And the safety car, we should just say, came out because Ollie Beaman had an off. He was trying to avoid accident and then came off and hit the wall. A 50G impact, massive crash. He's fine, thankfully. Limped out of the car, everyone was a bit worried. But I've seen a post on social media since that says he's fine. Thank you for all the support. It's good that we've got a break now, so he's got time to rest and recover. But 50G impact, that's big.
I was saying to Simone that I couldn't remember the last time I saw someone limping after a crash. Like, that was how big it was. He thought 2021 Verstappen crashed in 2021, and that was like, you know, that was a big one, and also kind of 50 days as well. I do feel it is rare that you see, because I remember when I saw him kind of limping and then had to like sit down, I thought, oof, like I can't remember the last time I saw someone that physically impacted. I mean, obviously they're all going through big hits, but yeah, so I'm really glad to hear he's okay. Yeah, such a sweet guy.
And we almost get desensitized to these crashes because we're just so used to seeing the drivers getting up and walking away. You know, like whereas
this
20 years ago, 30 years ago, drivers were dying. That was not uncommon. And in critical condition in hospitals, we've spoken about this in the past, the safety of Formula One has increased so much that now our expectation is almost like, well, oh, that was a hard hit, but they'll be okay, you know? To see him limping, I was like, oh, that's not good. But thankfully, yes, he's okay. I'm not sure who he was avoiding running into the back of.
Colapinto. I don't want to be, you know, negative on Colapinto, but I wasn't surprised, first of all, it was him. But then the commentators were all saying, you know, in fairness to him with the new regs and everything and trying to get your head around stuff, it is to give him kind of the benefit of the doubt. I think it was one of those things that he couldn't avoid. Colapinto couldn't. And then also Behrmann couldn't avoid either. You know what I mean? And actually, even the stewards said they didn't even view it as a reason for
the issues with this generation of cars is that it's the super clipping. So when they run out of power and they basically just, they don't grind to a halt, but their speed reduces by like 50 Ks an hour really suddenly. And then if you've got somebody coming up who's doing 50 kilometers an hour faster than you, like around a corner or something, then which is what happened in Ollie Bearman's case, Ollie's instinct avoid the accident, which has just seen him go off. And actually in the interviews afterwards, Carlos Sainz made a really good point. So Carlos is very anti these new regulations by the sounds of it. And his point was that if this happened in Baku or a street circuit, Singapore, where there wasn't a runoff area, you know, where someone would have just gone into the back of somebody else and maybe a car's flipped, like it could have been a really different outcome. And this is Carlos's point. So he's like, I'm really happy we've got these 5 weeks now with no racing on because Bahrain and Saudi Arabia have been cancelled because of what's going on in the Middle East, that the FIA and Formula One management can sit down and figure out a solution because this is not acceptable. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's a really good point because I hadn't even thought of that. Like, you know, these track circuits, they have so much space in a way, right? But if that had happened, to be honest, we talked about this the last time I was on the podcast, that I was so surprised that there hasn't been any crashes at the beginning because they're all with different pace and different kind of energy or whatever. I mean, I'm using the wrong technical words here, sorry. But, you know, that there's not more kind of like, you know, people running into the back of each other. And it is extremely dangerous. And so it is interesting to hear that. And I hope, yeah, that they will take the time to kind of figure that out because it's not good. I mean, see, like you say, seeing him limp away, it was woof.
Yeah.
And he's young as well. So, you know.
Young, fit, in his prime. And yeah, 50G impact is.
Yeah. Huge.
Mega. Huge.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Not to take anything away from the fantastic result, because as far as podium goes, I don't think there could have been a more perfect podium for me. Maybe not in that exact order, but the top three with an Italian, Kimi Antonelli, an Australian, Oscar Piastri, who's also got Italian descent, and then Ferrari and Charles Leclerc. Yeah. It was just, I was very, very happy with the podium.
Good point.
Oh, and a fun fact, in Japan, the legal drinking age is 20. So Kimi had sparkling rose water in a champagne-shaped bottle on the podium and got covered in champagne from everybody else, but wasn't allowed to have champagne in his. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, I heard that as well. It's so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. Like, that's funny. It is funny. It does make me laugh. The whole thing with Kimi makes me laugh. Like the fact that he was driving a Formula One car before he even had his license to drive a street car, you know, it's like, you know, all these kind of things. But that's hilarious. It is hilarious. Ridiculous, but hilarious.
I know. And being a Formula One driver and finishing high school, like finishing his year 12,
right?
To go home and study for exams last year.
I know. Yeah.
Nuts.
Yeah. we know Kimi's one to watch. Like, obviously, when you've got a good car beneath you, you're going to be, you know, winning races or whatever. I do think that Kimi could give George a run for his money this year.
I agree.
It's only early days, but the fact is Kimi qualified on pole. He then had a terrible start.
Oh, awful. Gosh, he dropped down to sixth position. He had an awful start. Something about dropping the clutch too quick and his wheels spun. He dropped down to sixth position on that first lap. Yeah.
And then, like, didn't panic, but got himself back into a position that, okay, now admittedly the safety car was very lucky timing, but I still believe, unfortunately, that even if that safety car hadn't happened and Piastri had been ahead, Antonelli had the speed to take Piastri, unfortunately. And we'll get into that. He just seems to be very, very cool, calm and collected. And that win kind of wasn't in doubt in a way.
I agree. I think Kimi, yeah. I mean, everybody's like, keep it real. It's only his second season of Formula One.
Yeah.
Let's not, you know, start talking about world championships yet. But when you compare him to George, look, he's Mr. Consistency. He didn't have a great race in Japan. And he also sounded really annoyed on the team radio. The bits that we heard anyway on the broadcast, he was just really annoyed with the safety car timing. No one's got a crystal ball. Nothing anyone could have done about that.
Nice.
So he missed the safety car by one lap, which meant he didn't get that cheap pit stop that Kimi got. Mm. Kimi is just, I feel like he's young, he's fresh. He hasn't had a ton of experience in Formula One and developed like old habits, I suppose. I feel like he's adapting to this car and this generation of car perhaps quicker than maybe someone like George. And he's just a natural talent, you know, which is why Toto would put him in a Formula One car at such a, you know, young age. You know, it's very exciting to watch. He's very exciting to watch. I really like Kimi Antonelli. And again, just hearing the Italian national anthem when he was on the podium and then the German national anthem for Mercedes, again, I was moved. I got emotional. It was lovely.
I love it. I have to say, though, now that he's won two races and I would think that probably got the bit between his teeth, I do look forward to him and George going head to head, like in a race, because it hasn't happened yet. But it will happen, definitely, because unless Ferrari and McLaren really pump it up and like, I mean, I think McLaren were interesting, and I think that, you know, they would have, without that safety car, we would have seen something interesting with McLaren and George, or Piastri and George, obviously Piastri and Antonelli. But I don't think they still have the same speed that Mercedes have.
No,
so we will see the head to head soon.
Yeah. Like after the safety car, and once Kimi Antonelli was in the lead of the race, his lead just kept increasing. He was, you know, 4 seconds in front of Oscar. Then it was 7, and then it was like 11. And then he ended up winning by 16 seconds or so. It was absolutely phenomenal that he just kept pushing and got fastest lap of the Grand Prix. Okay, he's got no one in front of him, so technically he's got clean air. But the clean air and dirty air is less of a factor this year than it has been in past Formula One seasons. It'd be interesting to see how Kimi and George do go head to head.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with George because, well, look, for the first start of this season, Kimi has no expectations. Because in his head, I'm sure he's thinking, listen, I've won a couple of races, amazing, delighted. But George is senior. George's got all the experiences. If anybody's going to win it, it's going to be him. So there's going to be very little pressure on him. But as the season starts going along, like kind of like Piastri and Norris, as the season goes along, the pressure will start to mount if Kimi continues winning, you know, side by side with George winning. But George, you remember that race again? Was it Singapore? I think it was 2023. And it was the only race that Ferrari won in the year of Red Bull winning. But George was right behind Sainz the whole way through towards like in the last bus. And then he got so frustrated, he crashed. And I do wonder if George has that still in him, that he gets frustrated. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how his own experience and how he's developed. That was obviously 3 years ago, how he's developed and what has changed. But he can smell this. He can smell this championship win, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, at the moment, obviously, we don't know what's going to happen in 5 weeks. Who's going to step up?
Yeah, exactly. You know? And what upgrades other teams will bring. This is the thing. Like, you could be the best driver in the world, but if you don't have the best car under you, then you're not going to win the championship, you know, like even Max Verstappen, who's considered the best driver in the world, is in a tractor this year and is frustrated beyond belief, but finished eighth. Qualified 11th.
I know, right?
No, like Max Verstappen.
I know.
But in lots of ways, I'm enjoying not having him in the narrative the whole time we're talking about F1 this year.
Yeah.
But Oscar, let's talk about Oscar.
Yes, because I feel that brings a very nice segue into Oscar. You could be the best driver in the world and not have the best car. I was so shocked by Oscar. I was so delighted for him. And I think that shows Oscar's talent that he, in my opinion, one of the best drivers, doesn't have the best car and yet managed to get himself leading that race only for the safety car, would have continued leading that race and finished second. And I just think that dude is one to watch. I have so much hope for him. Really do. Yeah. I've always had, but like, I'd be more so.
Yes, because he qualified in third on the grid. So it was Kimi and George first, second, then Oscar, then Charles in the Ferrari in fourth, then Lando and Lewis, fifth and sixth, McLaren Ferrari, and then Pierre Gasly in seventh, Isaac Hadjar in eighth, Gabriel Bortoletto in the Audi in ninth, and Arvid Lindblad in 10th. So that was the top 10, and then Max, 11th, in qualifying. Now the start, as we said, Kimi Antonelli had the worst start, and Oscar did a Ferrari slingshot and just came out of nowhere screaming at the TV. It was so amazing and exciting to watch, and to see him leading the Grand Prix for, 15, 16 laps was just fantastic. Amazing. And he's out-qualified Lando every race this season, even though he hasn't started. This is the only race he's actually started. Lando finished in fifth. Oscar was on the podium in second.
Yeah.
Lando, our one-hit wonder. Did I say that?
I know I would be stupid to count Lando out at this point, so I'm not going to say anything, but my little hopes and dreams are on Oscar. Obviously, Ferrari, don't get me wrong. We'll come to Ferrari because I have issues with them from this race. But Oscar, like for me, he is not raced. He's missed the first two races of the season. He gets in that car and he's leading the race for 15 laps. And it was only for the fact that they thought, listen, let's pit, let's get ahead of her, let's not let him undercut us. And obviously then the safety car came. He was also unlucky with the safety car, but he would have been leading. Now, I still think Antonelli probably would have come and taken him. But the point I feel is really worth making is that guy finished second in a car that hasn't been performing. He's done no racing and he's gotten himself up there. And I just think he is the making. He is the making of a champion. What I'm hoping is going to happen for McLaren now is that that will invigorate them and go, okay, we've unlocked something. Because they clearly unlocked something in that, like that, the waste of China. They realized they did some good work. And hopefully they're like, okay, we can challenge Mercedes, you know?
Well, I don't know if McLaren can challenge Mercedes, but I reckon Oscar in a McLaren could challenge Mercedes. So that's
Oscar on his own. No one else helping him. One thing I did hear was, because you're talking about the dirty air and the clean air, and they're actually saying, the commentators on Formula One TV, they were saying actually that it feels like for Mercedes, dirty air is an issue for them. That when they're in clean air, they're away in a hack. They're gone. You can't catch them.
Yep.
But dirty air is an issue for them. Like George really struggles to get past Claire. And he could pass him once. Yeah. You know what I mean? And Ferrari really weren't setting anything on fire this weekend. You know, I mean, getting the podium was amazing, but like they weren't. I had them up there thinking that they would be topping some tables, you know, but
I actually picked Lewis to win in one of my pick the podium prediction. accounts, not to be. And Lewis was really, really deflated after the race. When he doesn't have a good race, oh gosh, he's so low. But in fact, I saw a fabulous interview with him with Be In Sports Asia on Instagram. And they asked him about Japan and not about racing, about his thoughts on Japan. So he went to Japan early, worked out his schedule so he could spend some time in the country. He was snapped with Kim Kardashian walking out of a wedding dress shop, which I think they must have known there were photographers or people following them. And I reckon they just went in to give them something to talk about. That's what I would have done anyway. But he's got a real affinity with Japan. And in this interview, it said that he was bullied at school. He's come out and he's openly said he's got ADHD. So he was a kid with all of this energy, forever climbing trees and couldn't sit still, essentially. And because he was being bullied at school, he asked his dad if he could do karate. He was 6 years old, and he started doing karate as a six-year-old. And from the practice of karate, he learned discipline. He learned respect. He learned all of these things that set him up to being the disciplined athlete that he is now. So all those values have sort of carried through. And, you know, how gaming culture has had a big impact on him, you know, Nintendo, PlayStation, all of that, and Japanese art and music, et cetera. But it was a really nice interview. And it was, you know, the next clip that I saw was Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri trying to figure out a tokamashi Japanese toy, you know, those digital key rings that you make them alive and then you've got to feed them and look after them. And if you don't, they die. Like that's...
Tamagotchi. Yeah, sorry.
Yes. You've got Lewis giving an interview about how Japan has impacted him as a person from a really young age. And then you've got these other two guys mucking around with a digital toy. And I just thought, why don't more journalists ask more thoughtful questions about destinations? And anyway, it moved me so much that I wrote a Substack about it. So it's a good time to tell people that I started Away We Go is on Substack. Thank you. A place for my writing. It'll be the intersection of Formula One and travel, or Formula One and Formula One destinations. I'll put a link in the show notes. So please follow along. That would be great. But yeah, I saw this clip and I just stopped what I was doing and I just had to write something.
Yeah. I think there's a lot more to these guys than the media gives them chance.
I know they don't have a lot of time with media interviews or a lot of time in their schedule to be going out and exploring the streets of Kyoto or Tokyo or Osaka or whatever, wherever they are. But I feel like if I was the president or prime minister of a country hosting a Formula One race and paying $60 million or $80 million or whatever the hosting fee is to host an F1 race, I would want the stars of the show to be telling people about the destination so more visitors come to the destination, which in turn drives the economy and all of those flow-on effects. So that's my mission. That's what I'm going to do, is try and help Formula One fans learn more about Formula One destinations and spend more time in them, whether they're there for races or not.
That's nice. I think a lot of people don't realize that the country has to pay a huge amount to host a Formula One race. You know, you would think it was the other way around. I mean, I at least thought it was the other way around, you know. So, yeah, I like that mission. I think it's good, you know. And there's some really fabulous destinations. And I would bet that there are more to come at some point, you know. Hey, Japan is a place we want to go to. So, you know.
Yes. And speaking of Japan, I've published a Japan travel guide. So next week's episode will be with Tess Moon from Tess Somewhere. And Tess is a Japan expert. In that episode, she shares a lot of really great travel tips for anybody thinking of going to the Japanese Grand Prix next year. We talk about destinations within striking distance of Suzuka, keeping it all very Formula One relevant. On the back of that episode and with some other research, I've published a Japanese travel guide. So that's available for a free download on awaywegopodcast.com in the travel section. Look forward to that next week if you are thinking of going to Japan to the Japanese Grand Prix either next year or another year. And a fun fact that I learned today is that the fans that go to the Japanese Grand Prix, when the race is over and the podium's done, they don't rush home. They stay in the grandstand seats and they re-watch the race on the big screen.
Wait, really? That's bad.
I reckon that's so cool because, like, you're there and you're in the moment and you're in this Formula One bubble, which I don't know about you, but I never really want to leave it when I'm in the Formula One bubble. Mm-hmm. So then you get a chance to re-watch the race, and especially when you're there live too, there's so much you miss, right? Because you're watching the track and you're watching things going on and You're not always watching the big screen and you can't really hear that anyway. So there's a lot that you miss when you're watching it live. So to be able to re-watch it there and then, I think is brilliant. And another fun fact about the Japanese fans, besides making all the friendship bracelets that they make, that they swap with each other, a bit like the Swifties, they make the friendship bracelets ahead of her concerts and stuff. And they get dressed up to go to the Japanese Grand Prix, which is fantastic. in different costumes and
they make their own merch,
but they pick up all their rubbish and they take it home with them.
Oh my God, that's so good.
I know, right?
Right, yeah.
And right. It's seen as bad form if you don't. Like, it's really frowned upon.
That's yeah.
Just what Love they us. Do. They have their Ziploc bags or whatever and they take all their rubbish home.
They take their rubbish with them. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so good. Yeah. I find it so frustrating when I see people throw rubbish on the street or if there's not enough bins or anything like that. But to go that extra mile to actually bring your rubbish home with you, oof, yeah, that's impressive.
They're
constantly outshining us. They love us.
I think it's a great habit that the rest of the world should adopt. I think it's brilliant. Yeah. Speaking of brilliant, Fernando Alonso in the Aston Martin completed a Grand Prix, firstly, so that's yay. But he's a dad. Congratulations to Fernando and his girlfriend, Melissa, on becoming first-time parents. That's very exciting. So he missed media day on Thursday as a result. And, yeah, I'm sure he's rushing home straight after the race to get home to his new family.
I can't imagine Alonso as a dad, but I do think it's a new lease of life. So that's exciting.
Other F1 news that we should just mention, Jonathan Wheatley is no longer team principal of Audi. Feels like really old news now. That happened last week. He's out and, you know, all the rumours swirling around is that he'll be moving over to Aston Martin, but there's no announcements about that yet. Matteo Binotto, the Italian who was head of Ferrari before Fred Vasseur stepped in, is taking over the leadership of Audi. I mean, he was head of the Audi project anyway.
I think they're still trying to find a team principal though there in Audi though. I did read something that they're still going to find somebody else, but yeah. Yes. I mean, like Wheatley seems like such a nice guy. It's kind of mad, you know, to not get on with him kind of thing. I know it's the other way around. I think it was more that he wasn't getting on with Binotto, but yeah, interesting. Because I thought they all had like, the term was garden leave, but I'm not sure if that's the right term.
Yeah, gardening leave. That's right.
Yeah, right. They can't be on, you know, sharing secrets. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe the Aston Martin rumors aren't true, but hopefully he ends up somewhere good. Because it seems like
I think Audi, they're looking really, really promising. I mean, considering that they've got a new power unit, they're essentially a new team. I think there are a lot of things at play with Jonathan Wheatley. Either way, he's out, and we'll just have to watch this space of what happens next.
Well, I just wanted to talk about Ferrari in the race.
Oh,
we didn't
get
to talk about that. Yeah, just obviously I was really delighted with Charles that he managed to get the podium and everything. And actually, funny enough, had him in my prediction. So I was really delighted with myself. But I think I had a different prediction on Away We Go and to what I had on Formula Life Pulse. I just felt like, I don't know. I mean, I get that they're teammates. I get that they're each other's biggest competitors. I get that they both wanted the podium. But I just feel like Ferrari don't seem to work together to, like, you know, like it's like they were like, if Charles comes on the thing saying, you know, we're losing a lot of time here. And I'm not expecting them to say, hey, Lewis, pull over and let's Charles through. But it just seems like there's never any conversation. And it just seems like they're always kind of fighting each other. Now, in this case, they didn't lose out, as in one of them didn't lose out. Charles got the podium. Great. He did also qualify ahead of Lewis, so I do think it was more fair. But there just seems to be like this kind of thing of, well, we're just going to fight each other and to the detriment of the team game. You know what I mean? In this case, you understand probably where Hamilton was coming from, because I'm sure in his head he thought, well, if I let Charles through, I'm going to have George on my ass and then I'm going to be down to fifth. And he ended up even being sixth in the end because Norris took him in the end. So I get that. And I get that he didn't want that to happen. But I still feel like they just don't play the team game with each other. And I get it, they're both equally competitive. So it's frustrating to watch.
Did you see in the cool down room, Charles was saying, you know, have the replays of the moments in the cool down room before they go on the podium. And Charles and Lewis were battling. Charles said, we made contact and it was lucky that I didn't have an adventure, or I could have had an adventure, as in going off track as a result. That was so close. I thought, oh my God, they're going to take each other out.
Yeah.
And thankfully, thankfully they didn't. I feel like you've made a really good point there. It feels like Charles Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton are both driving for Ferrari, but it almost feels like two teams, like not one team.
Right. You know what I mean? And I get it. Like, I get it. Podiums are so rare. I totally understand it. And I understand where Lewis is coming from. He's really trying to prove himself and get himself back up there. And Charles is his biggest enemy in a way. But it's like, they just never seem to be racing for the, I hate this phrase, but the greater good of Ferrari. Yeah. You know what I mean? And in this case, it's exciting for us. I mean, obviously, to see them battle. I mean, everybody seems to be, I was like behind my eyes, going behind my hands, going, please don't take each other out. Thank God they haven't. Yeah,
I know.
Like, right? So far.
I feel like it's just a matter of time, though, before
right?
they do. We don't know what the deal was when Lewis joined Ferrari. We don't know that. Like, Lewis is not going to join a team like Ferrari and be number two driver. Charles has been with Ferrari for, what, 8 years now and has been brought up through the Ferrari ecosystem. He is not going to settle and all of a sudden become a number two driver. So maybe that's the system. Maybe that's a setup in the team that we're just not privy to. I don't know. It is nerve-wracking to watch sometimes, that's for sure. At least we're not hearing Lewis on the radio clarifying for information and asking for information. He and his race engineer seem to at least be communicating well.
Yeah.
From the snippets that we're seeing anyway. Oh, one thing I did notice on the broadcast, there was no battery graphics at all throughout the whole broadcast, not one.
Yeah, I noticed.
I wonder what's going on there.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of information they're not sharing with us, yeah.
Yeah, there is.
Predict the podium.
I am stupid.
On the Formula Live Pulse prediction, I'm on 80 points. So I picked a couple of things right. I scored 25 points this week. Not much, but I did. I picked the safety car. I picked Kimi for fastest lap. Something else. 55 points in total. Position 80. Where are you?
Okay, I think we're similar. I got 30 points this week because I got Kimi fastest lap, which seems to be a regular thing now.
You're 75. You're ahead of me.
That's a shocker, to be honest. So I got Kimi fastest lap. I got Charles in third. I got Kimi also in the thing, but I didn't get him in the right position. So I got 5 points for him. And then I got a safety car as well. So okay.
We're
actually on equal
points. So yeah, but you're...
Equal points, yeah, but it's just...
Equal points.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
In... Away we go is prediction.
I don't know what I got. I don't think I got anything.
I scored no points this week on both of my accounts, my normal account and my secret account. I scored nothing. I got everything wrong, but I am still on top of the leaderboard, just equal first now. The niece is also on 55 points. She predicted well. And then Thoughtful Travel Perth, who happens to be someone I know, Amanda, who actually inspired me to start this podcast. Amanda, who knows nothing about Formula One, but she's playing along to be a supportive friend. Currently in second position on 50 points. So she predicted super well. So well done, Amanda, Thoughtful Travel Podcast. If you like travel, go listen to the Thoughtful Travel Podcast. 10 years she's been podcasting for. She's just celebrated a 10-year anniversary and she always has very, very entertaining guests on. Yeah, 50 points. That's amazing.
Oh, my God.
Yes. There's still quite a few people on zero that haven't had any luck yet. And it's still wide open. So if you want to jump on board, come Miami. I don't think you are far behind by any stretch. Yeah. Creator of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I want to give a shout out to Carl Mullen. So he's an Irish comedian who posts really funny, just very amusing Formula One content. And you can find him at Carl Mullen, MULLAN. I'll put a link in the show notes and go follow him if you like a laugh.
Yeah, he's a funny comedian.
All right, well, that's all the news I've got. Thank you very much for joining me, Kira, and talking about the Japanese Grand Prix. It was a great race. The race was fantastic and the podium was just awesome. And just to see Kimi winning back-to-back races, youngest Formula One Drivers' Championship leader in history, the first time an Italian's won back-to-back races since 1953. Wow, that's 73 years. That's a long time. A generation. It was a fantastic result. And to see Oscar Piastri start a race, hooray, finish on the podium, even better. Yeah. Fantastic result. All right. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for your company and for joining us. If you liked what you've listened to, please follow along. You can find us on all the social media platforms. Also, as I mentioned, on Substack, if you like written form, you can email us at hello@awaywego.com. And don't forget, yes, the Japanese Travel Guide is out. I'll put a link to that in show notes. We've got a special Japan episode next week, and I've got two really fabulous guests that you are going to want to listen to in the weeks following after that. So there'll be episodes every week, even though there's no racing on. Stay tuned. Thank you very much for having us in your ears. Thank you, Kira, for joining us. Until next week, and until lights out.
Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto.